Four.
Three.
Two.
One.
Go on forever. Remixes and whatnot.
It's not. It's the album version.
Linoleum Knife.
It's the album version.
Too long. Too long. Too long.
Fine. Whatever. This is a podcast about movies.
A podcast.
A prawncast. It's a prawncast.
It's a shrimp boat.
Cinema.
It's a shanty boat of movies. What? Okay, what was your reasoning?
Just because it's never
mind that. Was it because we were jamming so hard yesterday to State of Shock by Michael Jackson and Mick Jagger of the 80s?
I think wasn't that Mick Jackson and or Mick Jagger
Mick,
and
Mick the, Jackson
Mick Jagger and the
and,
Jacksons
and Bobby Jagger and
wasn't that
Janet Reno?
Wasn't State of Shock on one of the Jacksons albums?
I don't know.
I think it was. No, I just...
I had it on an extended 12-inch single. What are you doing?
I'm just adjusting my mic.
Why are you ruining everything?
It's you're the mic thumper all the time. You're Dave White of Movies.com.
Yes.
And I'm Alonzo Duralde of TheRap.com.
Also, yes.
And What the Flick on the Young Turks Network on YouTube. And...
Welcome to this...
Yes.
Thing. I'm really distracted today in this podcast. I'm
sure you are.
I am having a hard time thinking about movies or talking about movies. I'm just thinking about tomorrow night. That's the only real thing in my head right now.
Everyone call the wambulance because
I'm not whining about it. I understand, and I was told by someone on the internet that I have an enviable problem.
Yes.
But my problem is that the KCRW show that I'm occasionally on, it's called Unfictional. What's going on with our sound? What's that noise? What's that weird noise?
It's not us. It's coming from somewhere.
Is it the fan? Is it the fan above us?
I don't think it's the fan. The fan's on all the time.
Anyway, so, I'm on this show sometimes on KCRW. It's an NPR station. It's a storytelling show. It's called Unfictional.
And if you go to kcrw.org/unfictional and look through their archives, you can hear Dave's stories.
Well, tomorrow night, they're having their first live event. And I was asked to do this like 2 months ago. And when I was asked, here's what happened in my head. I thought, oh, I'll just tell the story of the fire. You know, when the guy set our house on fire a couple years ago. I'll tell that story. You know, take 10 minutes, 15 maybe. I think I'm going to stretch out and luxuriate in my moment, you know.
I just want to tell, for new listeners, if you recall the L.A. arsonist that was running around blowing up cars at the end of December 2011, we were among his victims.
We were gifted by his presence.
Yes. But it all worked out okay.
So anyway, I'm thinking, I'll just tell the fire story. And then my producer says, and we'd like you to just, you know, do it, you know, extemporaneously. No notes. And I thought, okay, I'm not good at that. I don't do that ever. I read. Every time I've read in my work in public, I read it.
Right.
And I'm really good at reading. Like, I'm not one of those people who can't read their own work properly. No. I knock it out.
You do.
When I'm on the radio, when I'm reading it for a recording for the show, I read it. You know, I have my paper with me. I'm reading it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to myself, I can, it's fine. You know, I'll just tell the story. Because really, it's just going to be a thing where it's going to be, you know, a small crowd. You know, Unfictional's not that hugely known a show. It's going to be me and other, you know, fingerling potato-sized people, literary kind of folks. You know, not a big whoop at all. I don't even bother to go look up the event information of the lineup. I just think I'm going to waltz in and do my thing.
Yeah, because you aren't bothering to promote this, which I don't know why you're not doing that.
It's sold out. I don't need to promote
it. Oh, okay. Well, fair enough then.
Sold out the minute the tickets went on sale. That should have clued me in to something that it did not. The reason it sold out when the tickets went on sale is because every single other person on the stage is wildly accomplished and or famous or both. I am seriously, I am the local band that opens up for, you know, U2 when they come to town. That's what I just found this out 48 hours ago, that not only am I expected to confine my story to 5 minutes, which I later on did learn. I didn't learn that 48 hours ago. But I'm going to be Tig Notaro. Tig Notaro is the...
other Susan people. Orlean,
Susan Orlean.
Greg Berendt.
Rob Delaney. Like, people. People. People whose names make things sell out. Not me.
But you're first. So you don't have to follow anybody.
That's right.
You don't have to follow
anybody. That's right. I don't have to follow anybody.
So you're going to be the local band that opens for U2 and plays their little heart out.
I'm going to go out there. I'm going to drop dead. And then I'm going to crap myself for an encore.
You are not.
Because that's what happens when you drop dead. The next thing that happens is you crap yourself.
You're not going to drop dead.
So, goodbye. Reasonably interesting world.
You can't,
not always so cruel.
You can't die because I'm not going to be here to do the show next week. So you have to stick around for that.
Bibbs will take over. He's a very hard worker. he could be counted on. He's home right now watching like 9 movies in a row. That's all he's doing. So he could squeeze in an extra hour podcast or two to take over Linoleum Knife on top of the other podcast, Be Movies Podcast, which he hosts with Whitney Seibold.
Right.
You'll be in Kosovo.
Yes.
Being murdered in the hostel.
I'm not going to get murdered
in
the hostel.
And I'll be on stage with KCRW dying of failure.
No.
And that is how.
You're going to do great, and
so
the audience will love you.
Enjoy this last episode of Linoleum Knife.
And people who went in buying tickets for other people to leave, who was that Dave White guy?
Who's that fat dude? Who's a fat guy that kept looking at his hands that he had notes written
on? They're going to say, they said Neely O'Hara had laryngitis, but the new girl was wonderful, especially in the dream sequence.
Yes.
So, yes. Relax. You're going to be fine.
You're going to love and let love.
That's right.
That's what's going to happen.
Tell me, darling. And I'm going to be at the beautiful Pristina Film Festival. I'm going to be on the medium-length jury.
But that's not causing you stress.
Which is referring to the film.
You're very excited about this.
I'm psyched, yes, and you don't need to be freaking out about me being murdered in the hostel, which, as somebody pointed out on my Facebook page, those movies were set in Slovakia.
Same place.
So that's like saying that that's like citing City of God when you're going to Mexico.
Same.
So you're being a total racist, Dave White.
About
Slovakia, Eastern Europe, yes.
Guess what? Don't care.
The Western Balkans are totally different than the former Czech Republic.
I don't know that they are.
It's going to be great. You're going to be fine. I'm going to have a good time at Kosovo and come back in one piece. So just calm down, Dave White.
I'm bringing note cards on stage.
Fine.
I'm just doing it.
Cheat? I don't
because
care.
Because I'm cheating. I'm going to cheat.
No. Look.
I'm going to be Janine Garofalo in 1990. I'm just going
to
do.
Play to your strengths.
I'm going to bring my note cards on stage, and I'm just going to. Because
it's hard enough for
here's
you.
The worst thing
it'll be hard enough for you to maintain any story to 5 minutes because you're the talkingest man.
And
I know.
I'm slow.
So yes, by all means, bring the notes, Turtle Man.
When I can read, I'm good. Like I know I can knock it out if I just have my words in front of me. Mm. I'm not a performer. I'm not a stand-up comic. I'm not any of that stuff. I'm not a performer or an actor or anything. I'm just a writer, and I'm good at reading my own stuff.
I bet Susan Orlean will have notes, too.
She's going to have them written on her hand with Sharpie like me? Because that's how this is going to roll.
That tomorrow. I don't know. Sarah P.
That's how it's going to be. I'm so freaked out right now. I can barely do this podcast. Well, so begin talking about films, and I will grunt affirmation or displeasure.
Put that aside.
As you talk about
and let's.
Film.
Why don't you talk about Insidious Chapter 2?
Even this nice cup of tea I'm drinking right now is not soothing me.
Why don't you talk about Insidious Chapter 2 since you loved it so
I
much?
I did love it, and I'm going to marry it. Insidious Chapter 2. It picks up where Insidious Chapter 1 left off.
Yeah.
In Insidious Chapter 1, which was not called Insidious Chapter 1, it was merely called Insidious.
With a title card that said had Insidious in red letters while the music went.
That was a really good opening title card.
And they bring it back.
Yeah. And in the first Insidious, Rose Byrne and
Patrick Wilson.
What's his face? Patrick Wilson.
He got the booty.
Do you have to? Is that necessary?
He has shared it in enough films.
He has.
It's like talking about Ewan McGregor's.
Yes, he has. It's all over Little Children.
Yes.
Well, that doesn't sound right.
The film entitled Little Children,
where he's doing it with
Kate Winslet on a washing machine.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
And
yes.
Angels in America, and you know.
He has a nice set of
glutes,
twerk meats. And
I'm adding color. You're doing the play by play.
No, what you're doing is you're derailing my description with the male gaze.
Oh, forgive me.
Only it's not directed at some lady's breasts.
Forgive me, Robin Wood.
It's directed toward some guy's butt cheeks. And how is it any different for you to do that than for some guy to be like, I sure do like Scarlett Johansson's boobies.
I just went back and listened to the What the Flick review of Parker.
Yeah.
And Christy Lemire goes on at length about J-Lo's rear end.
How much she wants to dive into it?
No, just admiring it, which is all I did here. You are reading past. All I said was he had a nice booty, which he does. He's the man, J-Lo.
I've seen him out in the city.
Uh-huh.
Like, I saw him eating lunch one day. Would you like me to go tell him that you admire his ass when I when I see him out again sometime?
No, but actually, you could tell him that I thought his wife, Dagmara Domenchik, was amazing in Higher Ground, a movie you haven't seen yet, but you will.
What's it? What's her name?
Dagmara Domenchik.
That's a name I can't remember or pronounce.
She is a very cool actress. I think she's, I don't know if she's Hungarian or something. I don't remember. But she's dark and gorgeous and really cool.
Of course she's gorgeous. She'd have to be to marry a man who's got such a nice butt.
I suppose
right?
So. That's the rule.
Isn't that the rule?
Well, I don't know. J-Lo married Mark Anthony.
True. All right.
So Insidious 2.
Are we done talking about people's bodies now? Are we?
Oh, I'm sorry if I dragged the conversation into the mud.
We're so...
I dragged the description of Insidious Chapter 2 to a low place. Please, let's keep it about the art.
I have a phobia just of that, though. It's like, personally, I never want to be the guy who talks about any actor's body.
I don't. In writing, I generally don't.
Okay.
But it's just us here.
Just us and two dozen listeners.
Yes. Bless them.
In Insidious 1, they think they live in a haunted house. They don't. They live with haunted folks. And the mystery is who's haunted and why and how they get out of that. At the end of Insidious 1, I left feeling strange. I thought of it as sort of half a movie. I felt the first hour was very suspenseful and very frightening, because it was full of mystery. You didn't know where it was coming or why. Mm-hmm. But then about midway through the movie, they explain it. like, oh, astral projection and, you know, things in the past and ghosts and are haunting you and, you know, they're drawing you into the other world and
the realm between the living and the dead.
Let's call in the paranormal people to help us reach into the other world. Lin Shaye, who's so terrific.
Yes.
And when it was over, I thought, okay, well, the first half was really scary, and then it just sort of like fizzled into this explainy.
Well, and also they left it with an ending that was very, the end? Question mark, you know.
Well, it was not the end.
Clearly, because now we have Insidious Chapter 2.
And now I have to issue a personal apology to Insidious 1. I'm sorry, Insidious 1, you were better than me. Either they knew what they were doing, and they have 132-pound scrotum. Because to keep a secret from the beginning to the end of your first film and never tell the audience what that secret is, knowing that you're going to obviously make a sequel where you will finally tell the secret, that's some nerve. So either they've got the most nerve on the planet, or they didn't know they were going to make a sequel, and they just conducted the coolest save I've seen in years.
Well,
and here's what's up. I'm not going to tell you what happens in Insidious 2 at all. They flee to a new house, which kind of doesn't make sense because they know that the house is not the point.
They go back to Barbara Hershey's house.
Well, the mom's house. They go back to Patrick Wilson's mother's house, played by Barbara Hershey.
Right.
Admittedly,
not the actual home of Barbara Hershey.
It's a mother.
That would be weird.
It's a great house, and they should have gone back there much earlier because it is a rad old house.
Yeah, it's a cool Victorian.
With amazing vintage wallpaper. I was admiring it.
And turrets and things.
Yeah. All sorts of great details inside, architectural details. So if you're bored with the movie, the house is just lovely. And then stuff happens, more astral projectioning and more mysteries and then much more confusion and convolution and plot doubling back on itself and throwing you off the trail for a minute to make you say, what? Why is that happening? And then if you just wait for it, like another 40 minutes, they finally tell you and explain it. There's a big reveal in the middle of the film, which, again, it happens in the middle of the movie, but it doesn't wreck the rest. It's completely satisfying. Watch both of them together for like this big 3.5-hour horror saga, if you can deal with that much, you know, of it. And boy, I sure did think it was cool. It ain't as jumpy and jolty and fun and old-fashioned as The Conjuring, which is by the same guys, James Wan and Lee Whannell.
Did Lee Whannell write The Conjuring?
I think so, yeah. And I could be wrong about that. Somebody look it up. Not me. Intern? Assistants?
I'll go get my...
And it's not as... This is probably the wrong word to use, but it's not as futuristic as Your Next, because I think of Your Next as being sort of a next step forward in contemporary horror. Not a game changer, but just sort of a next step and a sort of synthesis of things that are happening right now in film, all sort of put together into one movie. So it's not that, but I had a really good time, and I'm just so happy that, you know, we've had like 3 horror films in the past several months that have really been fun and engaging and interesting to watch and you know, very nice for the fans.
Lee Whannell did not write The Conjuring.
Of this genre, because we get so much crap horror in the world.
Right.
I like it when we have nice horror. That's fun to enjoy You can quote me on that.
For the poster.
This is where the edit button comes in, really.
I did not love it as much
as
you.
This is what I'm going to do tomorrow on stage at KCRW. I'm going to say something like, fun to enjoy.
Oh, God.
And people are going to go, oh, poor guy. Stop. He's never done anything before in his whole life.
Relax.
Yeah.
What, did he win a contest or something? No.
Yeah. Is he one of the listener contest winners that gets to come up and tell his little story? How sweet.
Tell people that.
Why is he so fat?
Tell people you're a Make-A-Wish kid.
A what?
You're going to be fine up there.
God, my Make-A-Wish is that NPR would let me go on stage. Thanks. Thanks, Public Radio, for my dreams coming true.
I did not love this as much as you did, but I did have a good time. If, in fact, they intentionally made Insidious 1 elliptical so that Insidious 2 could come in and close all the loops, I find that a little annoying. I'm kind of on Joss Whedon's side when he talks about being frustrated with the ending of The Empire Strikes Back. I kind of feel like even if you're making a trilogy, like, movies have to end.
Well, this one does end.
No, this one does, but the first one... If
I mean, they set it up for another movie.
Right.
But it's going to be involving in a whole other bunch of folks.
Right. Yeah. I'm not talking about... I'm saying if indeed Insidious 1 was designed to just be the cliffhanger for a sequel, then I'm not necessarily down for that. But I liked it. It was fun. It was, you know, it's not as fun as The Conjuring, but I think that it does do a fun way of lapping itself in a way, in terms of sort of revisiting things that you saw in the first movie and
making lapping itself.
That's what I said.
Like washing its own genitals like a dog.
No, like when you're like in a race.
I know.
Now who's gross?
Yeah, but I'm not objectifying anyone's.
No, you're just talking about dogs licking their balls. Well played, sir.
But that's fun though.
Is it fun to enjoy?
Fun to enjoy.
If you did not like the first Insidious movie, you probably won't like this one either. But if you did like the first one, then you will have a as good a time, if not even better, at the second one. And I will say that it doesn't just second verse same as the first it when it comes to being to a sequel. You know, I didn't feel like it was just sort of staking out that territory and like, let's hit this beat. You know, like I felt like it was going into new places and doing new things and still working.
It was very good.
Yeah. So James Wan, he's the guy. Who knew?
Well,
the Saw guy.
He's the guy who's also the guy who's one of the, he's one of the guys.
Yeah.
Because the Your Next guys are great guys.
Well, no, I know. But he's also, but James Wan is the guy who gets to do Fast and Furious 7.
James Wan is the big name now.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. I wonder if there's going to be a horror element to Fast and Furious 7. Would that be cool?
Wouldn't
they all get stuck in a haunted house?
No, they're not going to.
What if one of the cars is a ghost?
It's going to have Jason Statham.
There should be a ghost car. In
all it has to have is Jason Statham. It's going to be fine.
It should have Jason Statham. It should have.
I heard it might have Kurt Russell.
It's gonna. You know who it's gonna have though. It's gonna have what's his face from. It's gonna Patrick have Wilson. Tony Jaa.
Oh, Tony Jaa, right?
It's gonna be in it.
Yes, which is gonna be.
That's gonna be amazing.
Maybe there will be a ghost elephant.
Elephants. There needs to be a ghost car. Lucas Black needs to be in it.
Oh, no!
So that there can be drifting.
They can bring the ghost of the guy who gets killed in. In Tokyo Drift and at the end of 6, your guy.
You're making me blank on his name.
I know, I'm forgetting him.
Well, there needs to be some ghosts.
The sexy Japanese guy.
I would like there to be ghosts in Fast and Furious 7, so someone who's in charge of getting messages to James Wan, I want there to be ghosts. It could be a car. It could be a person. It could be...
Sung Kang.
Yeah.
Ghost
it could be
Sun
anything.
Kang.
It could there be anything. He could be the ghost driving a car that is also a ghost. That's all I care about.
Wasn't there some sort of ghost haunted house car in the Wacky Racers?
Yeah, I think so. Yes.
It had like a big turret with bats coming out.
I think so.
Maybe
that
can somehow work its way into Fast 7, and then all bases will be covered.
They also need a dog in Fast and Furious 7 that laughs like.
Muttley, right?
Yeah, Muttley.
And, you know, who knows? Maybe somebody who's casting that film will be at the KCRW thing, and he'll be like, finally, my Hillbilly Bear is casting.
Finally, my cartoon dog presents himself to me.
My paw from the Hillbilly Bear.
You're the only one that thinks that, by the way.
No, that's not true.
No, you are, because you put that on Facebook, and other people were like, nah, don't hear it. They hear cartoon dog is what they hear.
Wow. Who I always think of as cartoon dog is, yes, is Stuart Wellington from the Flop Movies podcast, the Flop Movies, the Flop House podcast.
What?
He just, well, I can't do it.
Does he do a good cartoon dog?
No, he just does. He has the kind of voice that would be coming out of a cartoon dog. It's not as low as yours, but it's kind of adenoidal, you know. It's funny. It's a good voice.
Adenoidal.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Moving on, the other big release this week, which made about a tiny fraction of what Insidious 2 pulled in, The Family with Robert De Niro and Michelle Pfeiffer and Tommy Lee Jones from that noted legend of wit and comedy, Luc Besson. But it's actually not bad. Not great, but not bad.
It's all right.
Yeah.
Talk about
all right, so...
Because I'm not interested enough to talk about
so,
it.
Really. So De Niro plays, get this, a mobster who has informed on his former cohorts. And so,
like
now,
I said in my review on movies.com, at this point in his career, De Niro should just be hiring himself out to do Goodfellas themed stand up for rich children at Chuck E. Cheese birthday party.
Yeah, it's very kind of tired casting. He's a former mobster. His wife is Michelle Pfeiffer because she's married to the mob. Get it?
Also to Scarface.
And to Scarface. And they have been in witness protection and working their way around France, but they keep getting discovered, so they keep getting moved and given new identities.
Yes.
When the film opens, they are going to Provence.
For some herbs.
For Herbe de Provence and getting settled in. And basically, you know, they keep acting in mobstery ways. De Niro's trying to deal with the brown water that comes out of the sink, which means...
Is it Russell Crowe running a vineyard in Provence now?
Probably. After that,
wasn't there a movie about
that movie that nobody saw?
Wasn't there a movie about him operating a vineyard in Provence?
Yes. That was a good year, I think it was called. It was that, the movie that he did with Ridley Scott that nobody saw.
I don't remember it. I think I saw it, and I don't remember it.
Probably. So De Niro's trying to deal with the local, you know, plumbers and city government, and he starts sort of, you know, breaking legs and being very mobstery about it. Pfeiffer has a tendency to blow up grocery stores where they treat her rudely. Their two kids, who are played by Diana Agron of Glee and John DeLeo, basically run their entire high school like a racket. You know, they're pulling in favors and extorting money and doing all kinds of stuff like that.
And she's beating up any guy that looks at her funny.
Yeah, she's crazy violent. You know, she will beat the crap out of any girl that takes her pencil case. And Tommy Lee Jones is the unamused FBI guy who's sort of assigned
pencil
to...
case. Someone else who uses pencils. Not so funny now, is it?
This is a totally inside conversation that no one cares about.
It's very simple. Alonzo Duralde thinks it's unusual that I use lots and lots of pencils.
I stopped using pencils in fifth grade. I just didn't think people used them as adults.
Yes, well, you were wrong.
Well, I'm glad that's working out for you.
Yeah.
So anyway,
they're the best.
So it's
pencils are number one.
Fine.
Also number two.
Oh, I see what you did there. So yeah, so this movie is it feels very by the numbers, and you feel like you know where it's going to go, but then it does kind of take a few twists that are interesting and some that are so sort of part navel-gazy, part meta, that they almost make the casting make sense, and it feels like the whole thing is just a big inside joke. I laughed a few times, and I thought the teens were entertaining and their whole high school shenanigans. Pfeiffer is fun. Even, you know, De Niro is... You know, De Niro can just do this without even thinking about it. And
mostly he does.
Mostly, yeah. Tommy Lee Jones, like, is giving us...
Even more so.
Baseline Tommy Lee Jones. Like, not Tommy Lee Jones not even trying. Tommy Lee Jones before his first cup of coffee. But all that being said, I had an okay time.
I like the part where Michelle Pfeiffer roasts peppers in garlic and olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
Because that made me really hungry for that.
And then she
dunked the bread in it.
And then she has that whole speech about how, like, they're killing her in France with all the butter and cream on everything.
Yeah, and I thought to myself, okay, I understand this is a joke. because the next thing she's eating McDonald's. So like,
she's Italian. She's got olive oil caresses your insides.
Yeah, olive oil caresses your insides, which is the best line in the movie. But the idea that
butter and cream are bad.
The butter and cream from France or some just revolting.
Yeah. Thing. Shut up.
Yeah, shut up. But again, that was meant to be a joke. It was meant to be funny. Everyone knows that that stuff is delicious.
The greatest thing on earth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially because it has Herbe de Provence in it.
But the, I got sidetracked when she made the roasted peppers and they get the bread out and they start dunking it in the olive oil and I thought...
You went into a fugue state.
That's all. I don't know anything else that's happening right now in this film. I want that. I want it to caress my insides. So there you go.
Yeah, it's negligible, but if you feel like you really want to go see a movie right now and
it's inoffensive unless you hate violence because it's super violent.
It is pretty violent.
But it's, you know, funny enough.
And it's hard to be violent and stay funny, and it doesn't always pull it off.
Not.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. But I think this, you know, this movie does it better than Two Guns did, for instance.
Well, yeah.
You know. Also this week in limited release, and I think possibly on demand, is Blue Caprice.
Right.
Which is about the DC Snipers.
Sort of. Well, it's about
them. It's totally about
it's
them.
Not about the, it's not about
it's
the...
It's not about the incident. It's about
not
the
about
people.
The incident. It's about the two guys who did it, the adult man mm-hmm. and the teenage boy that he cult brainwashed, sort of.
Yeah.
Adopted and then... You know, love bombed and then put to the test and like kill all these people if you love me and
yeah.
Which is apparently how it all went down.
Apparently
more
so.
Or less. It's based on the true story. It's been fictionalized a bit here and there was what I understand.
It stars Isaiah Washington and Taquan Richmond, mm-hmm. who both give, I think, really terrific performances.
Yes.
They're riveting to watch. The movie we're never made to side with them. You know, it's not one of those movies where you know, you're put into the killer's mind and meant to empathize with them. No, I mean, you're always sort of standing back going, ugh. But
right.
At the same time, it's still fascinating and it's still just, you know, really compelling. I think that for stories like this, it lets us off the hook to pretend that anybody who can commit this kind of act is inhuman, is no longer human. And that's not the case. And so I think as the rest of humanity, it benefits us to know what does push somebody to those extremes and to do something so horrific. And what is it inside the human condition that makes something like that very possible?
Oh, and what you learn about both of them is that there are different reasons for why they've done what they've done.
They're broken in different ways.
And Washington's character does the breaking.
Yeah.
Of this kid.
Well,
like this kid is already damaged goods because he's been abandoned by his mother repeatedly and this time permanently.
Right. Clearly desperate for a parental figure, and the one he gets, unfortunately, is the worst
is a lunatic.
Possible one.
Yeah, he gets a lunatic. He could have gone the other direction. He could have been, you know, sent off to some sort of foster care for someone who actually cared about, you know, the development of a healthy, you know, child into an adult, but instead he wound up with this guy. And what I like about the movie is that it's very, very restrained.
Yes.
It's very quiet and it's very pulled back. And it suggests rather than shows. And so...
And when they get to the actual shootings, you know, it's very...
They are five killings in before they ever... talk about it.
Yeah.
You hear about it on the news.
Yeah, you get like the 911 calls on the soundtrack, but you don't get these sort of POV, you know,
no.
Looking through the rifle scope and pew,
well, you know. Do once, but it's for a different reason.
Right.
And invariably what you see is the car sort of slowly driving away down the freeway in slow motion, and you'll see bodies lying on the ground, but it is as though what you are seeing is how witnesses saw this happen.
Right.
Because witnesses never saw the bullet. Witnesses saw people simply fall to the ground.
Yeah.
And so you'll see a body on the ground, but it's as though it just put itself there. And so it's a really interestingly constructed, it's an interestingly shot movie. I really like how it looks. I like the tone of it.
Really powerful ending.
It avoids a lot of cliche that stuff like this usually just wallows in.
Yeah, like if this were the Lifetime version and it starred Isaiah Washington, I don't know.
Isaiah Washington on a bad day.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, like, yeah, they, you know, if this were the sort of movie that, like, that Mark Harmon used to do and that, like, Rob Lowe does lately, you know, the sort of, he seemed so normal, but he was a killer, you know.
Right.
Yeah, it could have been much more.
Well, what Rob Lowe did about 10 years ago, really.
I think he did one pretty recently, actually.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Because his profile's gone back up again.
No, but he's been
Parks and Rec and
he did Ken one of those Lobra. Lifetime movies in the last 3 or 4 years.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, yeah.
He's got to work.
The check cleared. I'm not blaming him. Anyway, this could have been told in a much crazier and less interesting way, and I think this film.
He's got a pizza oven to maintain,
exactly,
so that Oprah can come visit.
Right.
At the Santa Barbara compound.
This film, I think it's restrained, but it's still no less powerful for it.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. Also opening this weekend in limited release is Jane Mansfield's Car.
I did not see it.
Which is the first film to be directed by Billy Bob Thornton since 2001.
Yeah, well, he's had a bad luck after Sling Blade.
Yeah.
Everything he's made after Sling Blade, people just don't seem to want to release it widely or release it under his, you know, care.
I mean, the big catastrophe was
taken away
was
from
all
the
Pretty Horses, which Harvey Weinstein changed the score and recut.
Even if you don't like the movie, you kind of feel sorry for him.
Well, bad luck. I wrote about this on linoleumknife.com. You watch the first half of All the Pretty Horses, and you can see the movie that he wanted to make, and it's extraordinary.
Yeah.
And then it just suddenly goes to hell in a handbasket. Like, suddenly everything gets really rushed, and there's narration popped in, and you're like, oh, wait, what happened? And you can literally see a movie go off the rails. So, but somebody told me that there's a possibility that they might actually put his version out, which would be great. But yeah, so then after that film, he did Daddy and Them, which I think was like Jim Varney's last movie, as I recall. He died around the time of that, and then it didn't really do much. And then he spent the last decade, you know, acting, but also he's got a band, he's just, you know, sort of pursuing other things. But now he's directing again. He wrote. Co-wrote this with Tom Epperson, who did One False Move. And it is a multi-generational story. It's set in Alabama in the late 1960s, and it's about a... Robert Duvall is sort of the family patriarch, and he was a medic in World War I, and he sort of still craves that level of excitement and gore, apparently, because he listens to the police shortwave radio and likes to head out and look at all the car accidents on the highway once they've happened. And he's got three sons, played by Thornton and Robert Patrick and Kevin Bacon, who have all had their own diverse experiences from World War II that left them changed in different ways. Vietnam is raging on, and, like, you know, Kevin Bacon's son is considering going, and Robert Patrick's son is in high school but is facing it as a possibility. Then throw into all this the fact that the Duvall's wife, abandoned the family years earlier to marry an Englishman, played by John Hurt. She has now died, and John Hurt is bringing her body back to Alabama to be buried, bringing with him his son
and
daughter.
Did she go up a hill and come down a mountain when with the Englishman to bring the body back? Okay.
That was a hilarious and timely reference. It was fun to enjoy. So Hurt comes back with his son and daughter, played by Ray Stevenson and Frances O'Connor. So you got a gajillion characters and a funeral and all these interactions and family regrets and recriminations.
One funeral and four weddings?
I'm going to strike you soon if you're not careful.
I'm just bored by this explanation. I'm bored by everything you're talking about. This movie sounds boring.
It's not boring.
I don't want to see it.
The problem with this movie is that it... There's so much going on, and you can follow it all, and there are interesting subplots that happen, but where Thornton and Epperson drop the ball as writers is that they bring up all these complications and all these sort of long-standing kind of family secrets and you know, anger about different things, and boy, do they spend the last act of this movie trying to tie a bow around everything. Like, people have these conversations that no one in real life ever has, where they literally just kind of, let's discuss all everything that we don't ever talk about, and why we're mad about it, and why I forgive you, and why this and that and that. It's like, oh no, stop it, stop, just leave us with some ambiguity, you know, allow some family problems to press on. That said, however, it looks really good. The period, the tale is lovely. There's a ton of really good performances. I mean, it's a great ensemble, and I think he's given them all fun stuff to do. But it just doesn't, unfortunately, add up to a whole lot. I'm sorry if I'm boring you, Dave White, with a movie that you didn't bother to go see. Yawn in my face, you cow.
I'm not a cow. I wasn't yawning in your face. I'm all the way on the other side of the table from you.
And
I'm
just and you're doing a big stretch.
Well, it's because I'm sleepy now.
Well, I'm sorry. I'm boring everyone. Anyway.
Podcasting really makes me sleepy.
Jane Mansfield's Car, kind
it's
of a...
It's not you.
Kind of a letdown.
I promise.
But if you're a big fan of, you know, Duvall or Billy Bob Thornton, you might find it worth looking at just for the performances. The other movie that I saw this week is The Muslims Are
Call
Coming.
Call your own spouse a cow on a podcast.
Yeah, well, you're being a jerk. You're flicking at flies with your tail. I would never yawn at you while you were going.
Oh, yes.
While you were trying to describe a complicated movie that
would.
I hadn't seen. No, I would not.
All right, keep going. Keep going.
Anyway, I also saw a documentary called The Muslims Are Coming. It's about a comedy tour of Muslim stand-up comics. And you can read that at linoleum-knife.com exclusively.
Yes.
So yes. Please go to our website and check that out.
Yeah, there's... is that the end of the movies that we're talking about?
That is.
Okay, because there's a lot of other stuff on linoleum-knife.com. What are you looking for? Oh, that... this week, more original content went up on linoleumknife.com. So you should be going there. If you're listening to this, you need to be going to linoleum-knife.com because it's not just a site that's going to host this podcast or links to our reviews on The Wrap or movies.com. It's going to be, and it already is, a place where we write things and do things and things are there to be watched that we put there for you. They're all fun to enjoy. So, yeah, go there. That's my commercial for linoleum-knife.com, a website for you. About cinema that is in conjunction with this podcast. Ta-da.
Ta-da. Oh, this is funny.
What?
Last week in letters, where we Wendy wrote us about getting her husband a utilikilt, and we basically said that she was Jimmy Stewart in Vertigo.
Yeah.
She tweeted at us, linoleumcast, FYI, my husband walked in shortly after you started reading my note. Both of us were in tears and giggling by the end. Well, thanks. Our work here is done. Speaking of letters, what do we got?
We're going to do DVD recommendations.
Sure.
The Train. John Frankenheimer film. It's from 1964. Stars Burt Lancaster. And
Jean Moreau, right?
And it's, yes, and Jean Moreau. About a French train engineer who has to stop the Nazis from taking all the great art treasures out of France.
Yes.
The pride of France.
Yes.
And that's it. They just, they've got to save that art from the Nazis on this train. And it is one of my all-time favorite, most exciting, suspenseful, thrilling action slash war slash train movies that I have ever seen. If you've never seen it, it's on Netflix. It is not streaming. You have to get the DVD from Netflix, or you can go buy a used copy somewhere because it's out of print, but it's on Netflix. And man, it is so great.
And do you get invested in the story because it's about art?
No, because it's just an exciting story.
No, I love that movie. It's great.
I mean, I am a next level art bro as well, as you know.
Yes.
But this is the fact that it's, you know, about art treasure. It's not like they're sitting around having conversations about art.
No, I know.
Burt Lancaster doesn't have time for that. He's getting the job done. Like he does in every movie.
Speaking of art, Herb and Dorothy 50 by 50. When's that opening in L.A. finally?
Do we I don't know.
All right, it's out there somewhere.
No, when it comes out, I'll be talking about it.
Because we really liked the first Herb and Dorothy movie.
Yes.
My DVD pick this week is Steven Soderbergh's Behind the Candelabra, which premieres on Tuesday. This was a movie that he could not get any studio in town to back, even though it had two Oscar winners in the lead roles. But HBO did, and good for HBO, because it's really amazing. Michael Douglas stars as Liberace, and Matt Damon as his much younger lover, Scott Thorson, and it's basically a story of their tumultuous relationship and Liberace's life in the closet and the excess of Vegas and all kind of things, but and it's funny and it's
their
sad.
Their relationship
and
was more than tumultuous. It was deeply problematic.
Well, yeah.
Like the entire thing. Their entire relationship gave me the creeps.
Well, yeah. It's supposed to.
It's just strange, and it makes you think about, you know, all those old timey gays and their arrangements with their you know, their lovers.
Yes.
I mean,
not a lot of them made their lovers get plastic surgery to look like them, exactly. Mind you, the way Liberace did.
The happy ones never got movies made about them. And so, you know, what we have as a historical record is sort of like bizarre.
Well, that's
gay
not
relationships.
There's that Chris and Donna love story documentary.
Okay, I'm talking about, you know, the majority.
Okay.
There are exceptions.
How many movies are there about happy marriages of heterosexuals versus
it's, but still,
ones that are terrible?
It's just weird. It was, you know, that's why it's a good movie. It makes you uncomfortable.
Oddly enough, I think it's also a movie that talks more about the mechanics of gay sex than almost any.
And how?
Than any gay film, pretty much. I mean, like, whoa, they're really discussing this now.
Well, like, of a specific kind of, you know.
Yeah, but still.
Some specific acts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, it's just not. I was surprised to hear that dialogue coming out of Michael Douglas and Matt Damon's
But mouth. Wasn't it hilarious
when
it did?
Yes, it was great.
It was great.
So, yeah, I highly, highly recommend it. This is a movie that would, if this were a theatrical release, would absolutely be a top 10 list contender. It might be anyway. You know, who cares?
Movie's a movie.
Exactly.
Doesn't matter where it is.
So, yeah, so it's out on Blu-ray this week. Check it out. Do we have a winner in the
We do, but I'm going to read some things first.
Okay.
Gentlemen, here is my entry in this week's contest. I sent an email a few months. Here's the actual entry. I sent an email a few months ago that Dave White must have lost. Twice I sent it and twice not read online. Therefore, I should get the mask for perseverance alone. Haiku be damned. Plus, I live down the street from Travis Moose. 43 words. Okay, so
that
was the entry. So, okay, so you lose, but we do have your original email that you attached again for the third time, and I'm very grateful, and I'm going to read it right now.
So that's your prize.
Yes, your prize is our attention. Last November,
that's not going to pay his rent.
Last November, I reserved a few. It's like the Huffington Post paying you an exposure.
Exactly.
Yeah. Last November, I reserved a few non-U.S. holiday movies, mostly in the bad Santa genre. One of them, a Mexican film titled Pastorella. You know about that one?
Don't know it.
What's wrong with you, movie writing book man? Movie book writing man.
There's a lot of about Christmas movies out there. I'm always learning about new ones.
One of them, a Mexican film titled Pastorella, arrived in the second week of June, as Netflix apparently has only one copy. The IMDb summary doesn't do it justice. Agent Jesus Juarez, a.k.a. Chucho, has always played the devil in his town's nativity play. Because you need a devil in the nativity play.
I was
going
to say, leave it to the Mexicans to put a devil in the nativity pageant.
This Christmas, when the new pastor, well, Did the Spanish do that too?
No.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure. I'm just thinking, look, I'm going on just on Santa Claus. Like, clearly they have a thing about devils and Christmas.
This Christmas, when the new pastor of the church recasts the role, the two men engage in a battle between good and evil.
All right.
Imagine a Charlie Brown Christmas if Linus were a sword-wielding sociopath with magical powers. It's listed as a comedy, despite the part where God gets beheaded. Dave, you would find this quite entertaining. Alonso, I'm not so sure. All my best, Tim from Baltimore. P.S. I live down the street from Travis Moose.
That's clearly an important thing.
We're very happy, and we're glad we finally read your letter. Yes. You don't win the mask.
Travis Moose.
Here's another entry.
Maybe y'all could have a Tupperware party.
Another mask entry from Alec.
Okay.
I saw this movie with a 5-year-old child sitting behind me.
Oh.
bad parents. I knew he would ruin the entire movie as soon as he started replicating the sexual moans from the opening sex scene.
Oh, dear.
I think I need to pay him a visit in this mask.
Now pay the parents a visit. It's not his fault.
Alec. That's a good one, Alec. You lose also.
He didn't win.
Here's a note.
I prefer to say.
Not winning is losing.
Thank you, Vince Lombardi.
Here's from Matthew. Are you going to ding me for the extra 5 words in my essay? Yes. You lose, Matthew. This is from J.M. I bought O Hussard Baltasar at Dave White's behest, and now I can't look at a donkey without crying. That's the runner-up. And yet you lose. Okay, haiku. Haiku, dude.
Haiku won.
Tim. Tim with the haiku, and here's the haiku.
Winner of the wolf mask from...
You're next.
From Your Next.
Behind these closed doors, I jump out and scare a man. A loud shriek. He poops.
Hooray! The winner.
Pretty much all you need to do is mention poop in your entry, and...
Don't go saying that.
That's going to probably win me over.
Do not tell people that.
You win the mask, Tim. For your poop haiku.
For your poop coup. Yeah. So send us your mailing address to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Send it from the same email address that you sent us the haiku from, so we know it's you, and we will get that headed your way.
This is from Rebecca. Dear Alonzo and Dave, first, thank you for the 90% knife rating you gave my 3 lists several weeks ago. I wear that rating like a badge of honor.
And well, you should.
This time I am writing to garner your opinion on 2 of the more interesting but not heavily media-covered controversy in summer movie casting. First, and I direct this mostly to Alonzo, as I know he is a comic book reader, was how Iron Man 3 tackled the Mandarin.
Mm.
Personally, I thought the reversal of having the Mandarin embodying Mideast/Eastern terror, while the actual villain was the manipulative industrialist, was quite brilliant.
We're totally spoiling Iron Man 3, by the
Whatever.
Way. But look, it's been 6 months.
It's the end of summer, if you haven't seen it yet.
It's been 4 months. Whatever.
In doing this, Marvel was able to have its cake, having Iron Man fight his great rival and eat it too. Acknowledge the character has its origin in yellow peril and stereotype. I know both of you enjoyed IM3, but did not love it, and I just wondered your view on this twist and if you were surprised by it.
Yeah, I did not see it coming. You know, when they announced Ben Kingsley as the Mandarin, you assume that Ben Kingsley as the Mandarin is going to be the actual villain. I thought, well, that's an odd choice for the 21st century.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think the reversal actually was very smart. It almost Manchurian Candidate-ish kind of thing, where you, like, look over there at the evil brown guy, and then, you know, the actual white corporate dude is the one who's creating the mayhem. So, yeah, no, that was actually a clever twist. I agree with you totally on that one.
The second casting issue, I agree with you.
She didn't ask you, Dave. You're not a comic
She totally... Writer. No, I'm implied.
Uh-huh.
I'm implied. The second casting issue relates to Star Trek Into Darkness and Benedict Cumberbatch as Khan. Did no one stop to think that maybe this time a Sikh character should be played by an Indian actor? And if you are not going to go with an Indian actor, perhaps someone who isn't as posh and white and Brit... I love Cumberbatch as an actor, and I realize he did a great job, and he had no say in the casting. but it made me think less of J.J. Abrams, who seemed to value keeping the spoiler unspoiled over staying true to the character. Do you have any response?
The whole use of Khan in that movie is kind of a strange choice. Just in terms of, let's retell Star Trek II, but differently, and there were a lot of things going on there that that the further away from Star Trek Into Darkness I get, the more I think, what exactly was the point? Why do it this way? Yes, obviously that character has always, you know, why name him Khan and then have him played by, you know, a Hispanic actor and then a Brit? You got me. I think that at this point, the name Khan has become so totemic for Star Trek people that they just sort of think, oh, it could be anybody, you know. But you're right. I think
They don't think.
They don't think. Right. Perhaps, you know, what, Naveen Andrews would have been a better choice. They could have put in they could have put in Cal Penn, and you would have had a Harold and Kumar reunion.
There are talented Indian actors who could have been in this role.
Yeah,
that's just the fact.
You could have even gotten some somebody huge.
I know Benedict Cumberbatch is the hot dude right now, but there are talented Indian actors who could have done this role just as well.
You could have cast a huge Bollywood star to sort of juice your international box office. You know, so it was a little sloppy.
Finally, I know you two have mentioned first meeting at an ACT UP demonstration years ago, but I was hoping you all would maybe share how you two connected to become the most adorable married couple in podcast land.
No!
Thank you. We are adorable. Haven't we told this story on the show before?
I can't remember.
All right. Here are the highlights. I'm not going to go into this whole long story, but here's how it works. We met again 3 years later.
Right, when I moved back to Dallas.
You moved back to Dallas. We immediately became friends. Immediately became friends. That was an instant given thing.
Yeah.
But you weren't into me because I was too manly. and you liked, you know, a never-ending stream of half-men.
Uh-huh.
And so,
this is why you got cast on this fictional thing, because you can pull completely made up stories out of your behind. Spontaneously, you're not even working off notes on your hand, and you're completely making something up.
No, we became
friends,
buddies. We hung out all the time.
Yeah, but there were, for various reasons, we didn't pursue a relationship.
All because of him. And then
you were hot for me from the get go, is what you're saying.
I was down for it.
Okay.
Yeah. You knew that.
I know. I just wanted to make you say it.
Right from the get-go, we were 3 weeks into hanging out, and I said, so what's up? What are we doing? I don't care, because you're cute and all. I would totally be dating you if you're down for that. But if you're not down for that, I'm okay with that, too, because I think all my friends are cute. So I don't really have a lot invested in dating you. I'm perfectly content just to hang with you. That's great.
Right.
And I wasn't really into the idea of having a boyfriend anyway. I just wanted to know where we were.
Sure. Yeah, and there were reasons I don't feel like getting into for the podcast audience, I was not immediately in a mindset of wanting to date
Check out that big dude that looks like an ex-con. Perhaps the plumber.
However.
I want some of that action.
after we'd hung
out. That is not a thought that crossed your mind.
After we had hung out for about 6 months, it occurred to me that you might be
attached. Look at that adorable monster face. Stop. That is not what you were thinking. But then later, you looked at me and you said, oh, that is an adorable monster face.
Yes, it's like you read my mind.
I must smother it in kisses. And that's what he did, ladies and gentlemen. The end.
The end.
Or the beginning.
Or the end? Question mark.
So that's the story.
Yeah. And that was, we're coming up on 18 years.
18
years.
October. October. If we'd had a baby on the day we became a couple, that kid would be
voting
as of October 1st. October 1st is our 18th anniversary.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, okay, so that's what's up, Rebecca. That's how we became the most adorable couple in podcast land.
I'm sure there are other married podcasters that would object to that.
But we're the most adorable.
That's what I'm saying.
Who are you to argue with Rebecca?
You're right. Silly me. She knows.
And wait a second. That's it.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. All righty. Well, once again, we urge you to check out linoleum-knife.com, our relatively new website, which we are totally loading up with new and interesting things. Yeah. Also, check out our dear friend Christy Lemire's website at christylemire.com. Tune into SiriusXM Radio for Matt Atchity and Gray Drake on the Rotten Tomatoes radio show twice a week. Also, every day on Sirius Out Q, there's the Frank DiCaro show and the Derek and Romaine show. Also, check out in the podcast universe our good friends at Throwing Shade, Team Jack, The Schmoes Know, the B-Movies Podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Podcrash, The Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and The Lunch. You can subscribe to this show for free at iTunes. And please, please, please go leave us a positive review. It's been a while since anyone has, and we like it when you do, and it helps us get seen by people and all that stuff. You can stream this show at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com. Please like our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. You can follow us at Twitter, at LinoleumCast. Check into the show at GetGlue.com. And as always, drop us a line at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com with your top 10 list, your worst 10 list, thoughts, questions, statements of our adorability, anything you have in mind. And we don't have any contests coming up. We haven't gotten any good swag lately. But
I need to go double check on this. Somebody was offering me something to give away, and I'm blanking on what it was right now. So,
okay. So there's that.
Like a DVD of some kind, and I wish I could remember it. Okay. I have to pull that up.
I will be in Kosovo next week, so Mr. William Bibiani of the B-Movies Podcast will be filling in here with Dave White.
And how.
And
stealing me away from you, perhaps.
Perhaps.
You better watch your step.
Anything could happen.
This romance might be interloped by the sexy Bibiani.
I sleep well at night.
If he were gay, well, that's he's kind of gay.
Not a big leap, frankly.
He's Gaytham for Statham. I know that.
That's true. that's the gateway drug.
I wonder if his girlfriend knows that. She probably knows
that. She probably knows that. Yeah. Okay. All right. Until next time.
Listen to Two Jasper Johns. Not listen to it.
Watch it.
Watch Two Jasper Johns.
On YouTube.
On YouTube.
Our friend Vinny Lopez, who was on the show about a month ago.
It's a web series.
Very funny.
So weird and so funny. Start at the beginning. Go to twojasperjohns.com.
You can TWO Jasper Johns. You can watch all three seasons in about an hour.
Yeah.
And it's very funny and quirky and offbeat. And also, we'll talk about that later. Okay, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.